Welcome to the NLX Dynasty Daily Podcast. I'm your host, Jordan McNamara. It's a 7-day strategy session here for Startup Draft that I jumped in. It's a Sunday fun day. Some people are familiar with these leagues. I know some folks that are followers actually play in these leagues. It's basically a safe leagues knockoff. Superflex, tight end premium, start 10, 28-man roster. So again, it's start one quarterback, two running backs, three wide receivers, a tight end. There's a super flex spot and then two flex spots. Two PPR for tight ends makes tight ends plenty flexible. I was doing some brief research, real brief. I wouldn't sort of draw any major conclusion about this, but it rang true in a league. I'm going to do a little bit more widespread analysis on this, but I'd be, looking more and more sort of at some of these roster constructions and figure out ways to start them. And I like this format because it gives us a little bit of everything to kind of look at. I've just used one league of my own to try and figure out something to the effect of like how many quarterbacks are started in a week. It's basically 23, right? There was one team, and again, it's a very small sample size, but there was like one team that just had Kyler Murray and was starting all other position players, wasn't really using the super flex spot, which was interesting. But the thing that I found was notable, and again, this is tainted a little bit because it was me and a couple other subscribers in this league, but there was north of two tight ends started on average for each team each week, something like 2.2. That's with the ability to start four, but really you could start three because everyone's using the super flex spot. Like that's a lot. I want to see this a little bit more. I want to see this kind of in some, from maybe a less AOD-centric league. But I guess the big thing that I would say is, like, I think that, the tight end premium aspect of this is something to really lean into more and more. Sort of we see the data. It's a format I really like because I do think that there's some holes in it that you can exploit, and that being one of them. So I like the format quite a bit. Individual rookies are actually included in the draft. We're starting the draft on March 5th. So I'm recording this just before we start just to get my notes out. It won't come out for another week or so. I don't think any subscribers are in this that might hear this, but I don't recognize anyone in the league that's playing against me. But I don't want to, I don't want to share it until afterwards. So I'll do this as a Sunday strategy session, once the thing's already ongoing, and then I'll do kind of a reaction to it afterwards. So I wrote down some goals. Again, I think this is a very productive way to go about building your team. And so, I would say it doesn't have to be you don't have to write like an AOD. But literally sit down and write, maybe a page or so of notes. Just like, hey, kind of here's my goals. Here's some players that I might like at cost that I really want to sort of target, kind of build around. Like, here's some drop dead points of like, hey, at wide receiver 4, I want no worse than X, right? Or wide receiver, at running back 3, I want no worse than X. Or, tight end 2 has to be this person or better, right? Like, do those things, and what will happen is you'll really hone in on your process, right? And that's something that I've been kind of talking about doing more and more. I've talked about it in a variety of different spaces, but I do want to do an actual thing on it. And so in this pod or in this league, what I did, and I'll detail it here in the pod, is I just wrote down some goals. So my goals were two supermax quarterbacks. And that was going to include trading up in the draft. And I said I would trade up in the draft to get basically into the top 5, top 6, if I had an early pick, I'd be willing to do that. If I had a later pick, I think I might have to adjust a little bit in terms of how I was thinking about that. But, if something in the middle of the round, I'd have to kind of see how it went probably and make that determination. But the goal was definitely to say, all right, let's see if we can nab two supermax quarterbacks. That would be basically, Mahomes, Allen, Herbert, Dak, Watson, right? Can I get two of those guys? Two of the top 3 would be ideal, but some of the other guys, you know, if it's going to be, if I'm not going to get those, right, it's kind of a drop dead at quarterback two for like Matthew Stafford. All right, so if I don't get two Supermax guys, I want two top 10 guys. Sort of be my thought on that. So I really wanted to lean into that, and I was going to be aggressive is the plan going forward. The tight end position is the other thing I think that's interesting. I sort of put in here, there's a couple ways to go about this. I'm not exactly sure how this is going to play out, but my goal is Goddard as tight end two at worst. And so, again, tight end plenty flexible. Like, I basically am treating these as two tight end leagues essentially at this point. So I'm being pretty aggressive in leaning into this, and Goddard at tight end two currently in the tight end premium formats on the RDP tracker, which is live and updated and everything. At the time of this recording, he was about tight end 10, about the seventh round. So I said, okay, I would think he's probably going to come off earlier than that, but I think no worse than that is what I want to be at tight end. So that was basically the initial spot. Again, I think in tight end premium leagues, you kind of have to track the positional runs a little bit, right? They can go off at different paces. Each league is a little bit different in terms of the marketplace, in terms of those. So if you see, you know, the top five guys or so go off, like, you know, it's, you know, maybe it's a round gap or so after those guys, but then it's going to come quickly thereafter. You know, if that's round two, right, you kind of know that the tight ends are going to go quickly, right? If you get two, you know, top eight picks at tight end, and then, you know, three more in the by the late second, right? You kind of know, like, hey, this is juiced up. But if it's like kind of slowly dragging along, tight end three or four is in round three or four, that might be a little bit later. So you kind of have to, that's the one thing I think you really need to adjust to and sort of be comfortable with. I do think the interchange between your tight end two and maybe a quarterback three, or you know, maybe one of the other positions, like a high-end wide receiver, right? There's an interchange there, which I'll get to in a minute. But Goddard is tight end two, basically is a top, you know, with his RDP median being about 10 is a spot. I'd be willing to go higher than that. I think I got him at, like, you know, if I had to sort of rank him, I think I'd put him at like 6 or 7 in terms of the actual tight end spots. I think looking at the Kelce Waller, like, range, right, that looking at that range as being the tight end one, and then Goddard as being a tight end two, makes some sense. You know, I'm not opposed to Kittle, one of the earlier guys. We'll kind of have to see how the board falls. I suspect I won't be it on Pitts or Andrews, just because it's going to be tough to sort of accomplish both of those things in terms of the Supermax quarterbacks and one of those guys. So I do think it'll be much more in like the Kittle, Kelce, Waller range of the tight end position, and then trying to, you know, run that back with Goddard. So that's the initial thought there. Three tight ends in the top 15 is kind of the goal as well. Hunter Henry line, right, kind of get inside that line as being a top three of the top 15 guys. I think that's really going to be a goal for me as well. Again, I don't make a huge difference between, you know, 7 and 15, but for a couple of guys in that range, Goddard being one of them, I like Hunter Henry sort of at the end of that range as well. So that's more of just, hey, I need to sort of be in the volume business. I kind of like that either there's not a ton of difference between 6 and 15. And so if I can sort of nab a couple at the end of the 15 range, like, that's fine. You know, if I have four in the top 15, that's fine too. I'm willing to do that. Three running backs in the top 20 running backs or so. Just looking at this, I think Aaron Jones at 806 is an interesting, like, spot. Like, that's probably a drop deadline in terms of getting one of those guys. Again, it might not necessarily be Aaron Jones, but listen, if Aaron Jones is going to be like running back 24, we're interested. You know, I ideally would like to go after kind of the Kamara, the Barkley tier, kind of hit that tier. And listen, it's one of those situations where if I can get in there, I think I can make this work, because I go early at quarterback. You know, with the first three picks, realistically, it's going to be quarterback, tight end. And then, you know, maybe in the next, you know, couple of rounds, it's another tight end. And then, so basically between rounds four and, you know, basically between round 4, 5, 6, 7, and 8, I'm really thinking about taking a tight end and probably three running backs. is sort of my hunch. Again, I think this year, this wouldn't be maybe an every year thing, but I think that it's exploitable this year when you start looking at where these running backs are going. Austin Eckler, 309, Nick Chubb, 311, Derrick Henry, 405, Saquon Barkley, 412, Dalvin Cook, 503, Joe Mixon, 504, Akers, Gibson, Kamara, late fifth, Dobbins, ETN in the sixth, Jacobs, Elliott, Elijah Mitchell, Clyde Edwards-Helaire, David Montgomery into the seventh, right? And then you get A.J. Dillon, Aaron Jones in that eighth. I mean, listen, if I can sort of go, and I'm not even the biggest Saquon Barkley fan, but listen, if I go, depending on who tight end one is, you know, if you go quarterback, elite tight end, Saquon Barkley, right? I think that's a pretty interesting start. You know, and then if you can kind of run that back with like a Kamara or, you know, later on, right, you could kind of nab any variety of these. I think the goal should be, you know, three of them. And there's risk in there, right? There's risk on Barkley. There's risk on Cook. There's risk on Mixon, right? They're kind of in an age where they're risky. There's an uncertainty about Barkley. You know, Akers is coming back from the ankle and didn't look great. Gibson, receiving questions and quarterback questions. Kamara, quarterback questions and ceiling questions at this point. Dobbins, receiving volume issues. ETN, like some people think he was overdrafted. He was hurt as a rookie, hasn't really played. Coaching staff change. Jacobs, the ceiling concerns. Elliott, kind of, you know, falling off a cliff. Elijah Mitchell, receiving ceiling concerns. Clyde Edwards-Helaire, questions about his talent. David Montgomery. Actually, I don't have a ton of questions about David Montgomery. Coaching change would be the one, but that's an interesting one. Like, I get all the way to the end of that list. It's like, wait a second. I actually know a lot about David Montgomery. Like, I actually think he's pretty good. So, so as you sort of see in there, everything's got everyone's got a wart, right? All of them have issues. And so, you know, if I take two, three shots in there, if I could take a four shot, I don't mind it. We'll see how that sort of plays out. But what I'm doing, and this is something that I haven't done in prior years, I think wide receivers particularly well suited to do this now. I can fade wide receivers. I can figure it out, right? And I'll sort of get to that in a minute. I think the most, and I'm going to do a series on this over the next, at some point in the next, in this offseason, hopefully it'll be the next month or so. But I'm going to do a fix-it series. Like, hey, how do you fix each position? And I think with wide receiver, it's so fixable. And one of the things that the reason why I think it's fixable is just the cost on these guys. It's really easy to buy distressed assets, right? It's really easy to, you know, and this is, I had this conversation on the game theory show that I was on recently about, you know, I don't want to be investing in wide receivers who are elite in cost and not elite in anything else, right? Because they tend to head in the wrong direction. And this is how you get kind of the DJ Moore. I mean, heck, Brandon Cooks is sort of this way, right? He was really expensive. I took him with like a second round startup pick, like 2015. I think it might have been 2015, 2016, somewhere in that range. But like one of my, like, you know, early on dynasty leagues, it was like he went really early, and it must have been 2006, summer 2016. But it was, you know, he was just going up that high because he had a good start and was a good player. But again, then he sort of leveled out sort of in that DJ Moore range, right, in terms of finishes, kind of where CD Lamb's finishing right now. And right, there's a big difference in terms of going from there to a whole nother level. And that's a place that I don't really want to be making bets. So it's really easy to avoid that and take some other shots at the wide receiver position. So I'm not worried about that. I can figure wide receiver out. And as those guys kind of, you know, as we make these bets on high, you know, I would say like good to very good producers being elite, what tends to happen is once they don't become elite, they become undervalued, right? Because people write off, oh, no ceiling. And there could be no ceiling for a variety of reasons. Like, they might just not have target ceiling, or they might not have touchdown ceiling or whatever. You know, there can be a variety of reasons why that happens. And you can sort of buy low on that, right? DJ Moore is a good example. Cooks, right? Cooper has had this happen to him, where they kind of, you know, fizzle out a little bit into the, you know, in the more of the wide receiver, like back end wide receiver one into wide receiver two range. And as a result, they stagnate in cost or drop in cost, stagnate, and then begin to fall off, where in reality, like, they're pretty dependable producers for what you're expecting of them. So I'm totally willing to play that game of trying to nab some of these guys in this draft. And then, you know, I can address it later on, right? And the thing about receiver in particular is I don't think they win you anything. Right, like, there's just not a big enough difference. And one of the things you see at the wide receiver position, right, you see it at quarterback, you can make a big difference in terms of, you know, being an elite player, right? There's a big difference between being an elite player and being, you know, quarterback 10, right? That can be a win plus, right? There can be a big difference between running back 1 and running back 10. That can be a win plus. A wide receiver, you don't see that as much, right? I mean, we're coming off Cooper Kupp where it happened. And Cooper Kupp, I think, is a special case, the fact that it was very wide in terms of, you know, his production, and he came from deep, right? Those things are kind of uncommon. But yeah, I mean, I think you can, but he's a good example. Like, you could have fixed wide receiver last year by taking, you know, a later first and giving it for him or something like that, right? That wasn't, again, that one really worked out, but you sort of get the idea. Like, you can address it. You can get Keenan Allen types. You can get, you know, heck, I got Devontae Adams for basically the equivalent of Mac Jones in the offseason last, or in at the trade deadline last year, right? I mean, you can really fix the position with elite pieces, or with highly productive pieces, I should say, difference-making production pieces, in a variety of different ways. And you can, you know, you can flip your running backs for them, right? You can do all those things. Fixing wide receivers, I think, that one of the easier things to do. And so that's not something I'm going to lean into. In earlier years, I would have. Again, I would have played age insulation, all that stuff. Listen, if you're going to go early at tight end, you have to sort of be in on winning now, right? That's just the nature of 3 to 5 at the position. Like, they're in their mid-20s, or they're in their late 20s, or early 30s at this point. If you're going to go that route, like, you got to go. You know, and that's not to say you got to trade, you know, your next year's first for a ninth round pick so you can get your last starter. That's not what I'm saying. But, like, you need to sort of be leaning into winning this year if you're going to sort of go with the team build that I have. So, and again, I can figure out wide receiver later on in terms of taking some shots on some guys. Again, then I'm going to swing for ceiling. And I'm going to be interested in taking shots on guys like Michael Thomas, or, you know, and maybe there's some bimodal outcomes there, but that's fine. Like, I can take some shots on that and can afford to take some shots on that a little bit later on in a range that isn't super expensive. Take a shot on Allen Robinson. Take a shot on Kadarius Toney. Like, sort of get into that range and take some shots. So that's really the plan there at receiver, which, again, corresponds to running back 3 in the top 20 or so. 806, Aaron Jones, kind of the thought for that. Some pivot spots that I've identified, you know, mid-second is Deshaun Watson. He's at 207 in terms of ADP. I'd like to have two of the top four guys, right, in terms of my four guys, which would be Mahomes, Allen, Herbert, and Dak. I'd love to have two of those guys. I think Watson at 207 is, it belongs in that group. If this draft was being held a month later, and that was April 5th instead of, you know, March 5th, this thing getting kicked off, I think it's a very different conversation about how Watson would be valued, because I think we'll have some resolution on that cost, right, or on the legal side there, and it will change his cost one way or another. I don't have that. I will say this. If you're taking him in a range where there's going to be Trey Lance, there's going to be Justin Fields, there's going to be Trevor Lawrence, or there's going to be Deshaun Watson, like, you take Watson, right? Because, like, we know that he can play. It's just a matter of when he will play. And I think that's, you know, if I'm going to make a swing there that could miss, that's the swing to make, right? Again, I don't think Stafford's going to miss. I don't think Ross is going to miss. They probably don't have the same ceiling, don't have the longevity, all that stuff. I don't think those guys are going to miss. and we'll have to see how kind of the board plays out. I think he's, you know, if I got a sense maybe that Stafford or Wilson were going to be there in like the third round or something like that, that'd be interesting. Like maybe if there's a potential to move down and take Watson. That's an interesting spot. I think push comes to shove, I'd take him there if I couldn't do anything. But that's going to be one of the key pivot spots. I'm open to a variety of options at quarterback three. I'm open to having a guy like Kirk Cousins. That's fine, right? Again, I'm building in flexibility. What do we know? What's the more certain thing we know right now is that good quarterbacks stay good. And so I think that with Cousins, like, yeah, he's at 407, quarterback 19 right now. Like if I take Watson and that cost and price is standing there for Cousins, depending on how my team build this through three picks, like that certainly could fit and I could make that fit. You know, Tannehill at 702, he's quarterback 21 is his median. Mayfield at 1012, he's 25. Ryan, same real range. Jimmy G, Jameis, all in that similar range as well. I think you could take a variety of shots at those different angles. Heck, I could even take shots on rookies. You could see a guy like Kenny Pickett. That would be an interesting one. The kid out of Cincinnati, Desmond Ridder as well. Like you could take some shots on those guys. That's more later on. So again, I'm not locked into any particular situation, and I view this very simply as I don't have needs right now. I'm just trying to draft as many good players as I possibly can, and I can make fit work later on. So I think that's the key to this early on in the offseason is you can make fit work. Again, but I'm sort of building in some thresholds to say, like, hey, there's a variety of options I could take here. I'm open to anything if it works. Again, like I said about the wide receivers, I'm fine shooting for guys in the 20s. And I view this really as, like, you can only do so much. Right. And this is true with anything, right? You can only, you know, when I was, and I'll use a good example of this from my real life. When I was working, I was a prosecutor for the first like 7.5 years of my career. I left there for a variety of reasons. I kind of had to go, which was fine. It had run its course and that had become painfully evident to me. I left and I went to a private firm, and that was January 2020. And then at the time, and no one knew this, my wife was pregnant with our second child. I knew it. My wife knew it. But at my going away party, no one else knew. And then COVID happened, and we didn't tell anyone until like probably April. So my wife was, you know, four months pregnant. Again, we hadn't seen anyone, so it wasn't like it was a big deal. You know, but at that time, I started getting to, like, cycling was really interesting to me. That was something I was picking up more. Again, I was doing AOD stuff in the Patreon form. I think at that point, I was doing football guy stuff as well. But now I'm, you know, married, basically going to have a second kid. I end up having, you know, the baby. Working a job that, frankly, required more working time for me than my old job did. And again, I was new. And they just had different expectations in terms of it was a private law firm. They wanted you to work all the time to make a lot of money, which I get. But I had all these factors converging, right? And it was like, all right, I can only do so many of these things, right? I have 24 hours in a day and I can do a lot of them for a lot of the time. But at some point, like something has to give, right? I can't really operate a fantasy football business at the same time as I'm working this job that, you know, they're requiring a lot more of my time in terms of this law firm, while also being a good dad, while also being a good husband, like while also trying to like stay, you know, or get into some sort of physical shape that I can, you know, live through a pandemic through, right? Like, you know, that I'm not going to, you know, be morbidly obese from, like, there was just not enough time in the day. Or in the week or in the year. It just wasn't. And so I had to make some sacrifices. I say, well, what do I want? And it became very clear what I wanted, right? I wanted, to do AOD stuff. I wanted to be with my family. I wanted to ride my bike. I didn't want to go sit in an office park every day and, work 10 hours a day and, 11 hours a day, 12 hours a day, be there on Saturdays, so I do Sunday meetings. I don't want to do that. I just didn't. Became clear to me really quickly of my life. And sometimes you don't appreciate it until you try it. But you just can't do all the things, right? And so you have to, you have to borrow from certain aspects of your life and make sacrifices in certain aspects of your life to reward other parts of it, right? So for me, like, it was, all right, I'm going to give up this job for, now I do AOD stuff and I have a part-time job that I do along with the AOD stuff. But it fits great, right? Because I can go and I can be with, I can take my kids to dance class or whatever. Like, I have these things. But I borrowed from the ability to have this job that, frankly, it's easier to explain than saying I'm a 35-year-old podcaster, right? It's easier to, it's easier, from a, it's fiscally more, more balanced, I guess, if you'll say, like, there's more certainty in it, right? There's all those things, right? But you have to borrow from that to pay forward to other things, right? The fact that now I can take my kids to dance class or whatever, right? I view roster building, and that was something I didn't necessarily appreciate, like sort of the sacrifices of some of those balance things, until I had to really do that, right? And the second kid obviously makes it more, it makes it more impactful, but the change in job as well, right? And the opening your own business thing, right? Those things all converged, and it was like, I can't do all of these things. I just can't, to a level that I'm going to enjoy my life. And so you have to sort of take one and say, I'm not going to do this. I say that long story for the purpose of wide receiver to me is, you have to, in life, you have to borrow from one aspect of your life to give it to another. And so I borrowed from the job prestige part or whatever, whatever being in a law firm signifies, right? Whether it's financial, whether it's, accomplishment, I didn't care, right? That didn't matter to me. I'm gonna worry about that about as, being a law firm worker means about 0% to me. It means nothing. Other people make a big deal about it. I could not care any less about it. For me, it was just simply feeding my family and all that stuff. So I sacrificed from that, right? I said, well, I can sort of sacrifice that and sort of lean into the other aspects of my life and make it better. And not that it was that bad, but you have to sort of borrow from one aspect so that way it allows you to fully live at the other aspects. Again, I use this analogy to sort of talk about roster building in the sense of, like, all right, I can't have everything, but what I can have is I can lean into efficiencies where we know that they exist, right? And I think that that's the thing with as we've studied more and more roster building AOD wise, like, especially this year, you can lean into elite positions at quarterback. You can lean into elite tight ends. You can lean into, frankly, running backs that have higher end upside, that maybe have shorter shelf lives, but at their cost, that's not that, that's not that penal, right? It's not that punitive, in the fifth round taking Kamara, right? That's not punitive, right? Because if he ages out quickly, like, that's not that big of a mess, especially if you insure it with a couple of other guys in the range, right? Like, it's fine to do that. But you have to make a sacrifice, and I'm borrowing from the wide receiver pool to do it. And that's fine, because here's why. Because every year is different. Again, I think a straight AOD, if you were to call it like an orthodox AOD strategy, something like that, like, hey, just a buy the book type deal, it'd say, like, all right, like, you go wide receiver early, you go quarterback early, you wait on running back, take a lot of running backs, depending on the tight end format, right? You can wait on tight ends. You could sort of take the known profiles. I think more AOD orthodoxy now would be you go early tight end, because we understand some of the, the production curves and the like from the 2022 edition, right? I think that would sort of be, you'd have to blend it together, but I think that would generally be the AOD orthodoxy. I think this year is very different because you have a lot of that running back stable in that, you know, late fourth into the seventh round. Whereas I think in prior years, those guys would be going, you know, second, third, fourth, fifth. Now they're moving back a couple of rounds. Is that some quarterback stuff? Yeah. Is it some wide receiver stuff? Yeah. Right. Is it some a lack of maybe, you know, of elite youth, right? Maybe at the running back position might have something to do with it, right? Or maybe there is, maybe you could say, hey, there actually is some running back, you know, there is some youthful running backs who are pushing these guys down. You know, I'm not sure exactly how you would read that other than to say the confluence of factors has made it so that way. In the fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth round, you have running backs that are very, that have difference-making ranges of outcomes, right? You've got a top, you know, you've got running back ones in that range. You guys who have finished as running back ones, right? You've got guys that finished as top, you know, 3 to 5 running backs as recently as the last couple of years, right? So, again, is that a 2024 bet? 2025 bet? No, but it's a bet, hey, pairing these guys with my running backs or with my quarterbacks with an elite tight end, I can go right now and I can sort of get ahead and then we'll sort of see how it plays out. So that's kind of the vision on that. And then it allows me to wait at wide receiver. Like I just put down here DJ Moore 508 as like, all right, if that's wide receiver one, I'm fine. It doesn't have to be wide receiver one. I could wait further. And again, I think you can address wide receiver at almost any time in the calendar. Wide receivers are such are going to be available for trade because what will happen, I use Devontae Adams as an example of this. Wide receivers can be really good, and ultimately they're not going to move the direction of your team all that much. And as a result, what you can have is a lot of teams on the trade block, you know, in season heading towards the playoffs with really good wide receivers available because A, they're not making the playoffs because their guys are, while productive, not changing the direction of their team. And, you know, B, those guys are a little bit older, so they're in a selling mode, right? And so that's how you can sort of get those deals. That's why I think the wide receiver position is really fixable. And fixable with elite guys, right? Guys that can actually make a difference. But you don't necessarily have to do that now. And listen, you can borrow from now, right? You can borrow from the position now and figure out a way to get it back later, right? I mean, that's the, you know, if we were to continue the analogy, like, you know, my kids get older and they're in school and sort of are a little bit more self-sufficient, I could go back to the other job. Right, like I could go back and work in a law firm like when that sort of balances out, right? You could sort of do that. I won't, but I could, right? So, you know, and so that's kind of it with wide receiver. Like as of right now, I don't think you need to. And so that allows me to take shots. Like let's Ridley, if I'm going to sort of wait on wide receivers, like let's take some guys that could really make a difference. Like Ridley at 7'10", sort of in blinking red lights. Heck, even in the 10th round, like Amari Cooper, maybe not the ceiling play, but a guy like Michael Thomas, right, in the 10th round, 10th, 11th round. Juju Smith-Schuster in that range. Kadarius Toney, Marquise Brown, right? A-Rob in the 13th. All of those guys sort of in that range, right? Take shots in that range that can make a difference is sort of my thought. And I think that there's uniquely suited this year for wide receivers in that range to probably be better than their running backs. And so that's typically not true in that range. It is true in the range now, and I think you have to adjust that every year. So that's really the big thing about the interchange. Again, I've went 10 minutes on this, but maybe even more. But the interchange between those positions, the way it sort of strategically lays out for us, right, you have to borrow from one to give to another. We're going to borrow from the wide receiver position to build strength at the other ones, and then we're going to get it back. We're going to try and make up the ground you know, in that range. And then listen, hopefully we've got some flexibility. We've built a good roster. We can sort of move stuff around later on if we need to, right? If I need to address that with future picks, I can do that later on. But that's really the plan, right? So again, two supermax quarterbacks, that's great. If not two supermax, let's get one and a top 10 guy. You know, two, a top, you know, a tight end, basically two, no worse than Goddard, which is about tight end 10 in terms of RDP. I think it's going to go higher than that. But three tight ends in the top 15 of the position. So that's kind of the Hunter Henry line. Three running backs in the top 20 or so, depending on exactly how they go, with Aaron Jones kind of the break point there. Again, that allows me, if I want to move a pick in there up, I can do all of those things by moving a pick basically in the first eight rounds out of the first eight rounds. So that's one thing I can do. Heck, I can add, right? Again, I'm not wedded to the idea of trading a future first or acquiring future first. I could do either one. Like, if I can add future first and accomplish my goals, that's great. I don't necessarily want to trade a future first, but if I can trade a future first for a top 30 pick, what I would consider like a naked top 30 pick, I would do it. I would do that, right? Again, I think future picks, top 30 assets, no matter where to do it in there. It's going to be hard to do that, I think, because people don't like to do that in startup drafts. But I mean, that's something to think about. So, if I can come out heavy with picks, that's great. If I get the opportunity to make a trade and it's giving a pick but getting an elite asset, I'm fine doing that as well. In terms of the overall roster construct, I think I want to have three starting quarterbacks, especially if Deshaun Watson is going to be quarterback two. Again, what does that second one, or what does that third one look like? Again, I'm fine with a guy like Mayfield. I'm fine with a guy like Tannehill. You know, if it's Cousins, that's great. I do want a couple of backups too, I think, at this point. Trubisky would be nice if I could sort of make that work. Mariota makes some sense. You know, I could see Jameis Winston being a player. And the thing I like about Jameis Winston is I think he can make a difference too. And so, again, if Jameis Winston's my three, then maybe I step up and can expand, you know, into four and five to be a little bit higher end, just because, hey, like, I think the pivot might ultimately be from Jameis Winston and a trade, right? That might be kind of what I'm viewing him. Maybe not necessarily the longest term hold, but I think the type of guy that, hey, he can maybe sign a deal and maybe start well, right? We see him healthy or whatever, and then he's ultimately a pivot guy. Maybe that's what addresses wide receiver, right? Something like that. So that might even make, and again, there's, I think, more risk in him as well. Coming off the injury, we don't know, right? We don't necessarily know how the NFL treats him. So maybe we do want a better, right? Maybe if we take Jameis, we want to sort of run that back with a guy like Baker as a four, right? Again, open to all ideas. I'm going to see how the board comes to me, but I'm building my team at this time of year with the idea of, hey, let's get assets, right? Let's get guys that can make a difference, and we can figure out the precise fit later on, but building in some optionality there. I like that. You know, heck, guys like Daniel Jones as well, I could take shots in that range as well. So I'm interested in doing that. More running backs than wide receivers is a pretty orthodox AOD strategy. It's not going to be probably 2-1 this time of year. It's just probably not going to be. It might be closer to even, right? And that's not to say I'm going to drive 9 wide receivers, but if I'm going to take, 5 quarterbacks, 5-6 even quarterbacks at this time of year, it's fine to do that. Again, it's 28 man rosters, so I don't probably want to roster that many quarterbacks, but if that's kind of the best bet this time of year in terms of getting myself assets, right, it's probably better to go backup quarterback at this time of year than maybe a non-difference making HHG, for example. Like, I think that's probably the right bet. And so if I am heavy on quarterbacks, maybe my ultimate move is to pivot away. Again, I talked about kind of making a mid-range trade from a guy like in the middle of my roster from a guy like Winston, right? You kind of trade from there and then tighten it up that way. I could do that. But I suspect that quarterback will be a little bit deeper than I would typically roster. I'm going to be tight end heavy as well. So maybe between quarterback and tight end, I'm rostering – between something like, 12 to 15 guys, something like that, 5 quarterbacks maybe, and then seven tight ends, something like that, to maybe a couple more on each side of that. We'll see how that goes. And then, you know, if it's 12 to 15 there, that would leave us with, 13 to 16 guys left of running backs and wide receivers. You know, if that's, a couple more running backs than wide receivers in that range, that's fine. If I'm going to wait on wide receiver, maybe making a couple more upside bets with that. Again, upside bets is, running Kadarius Toney with Michael Thomas, with Allen Robinson, with Juju. It's not taking, insert day three wide receiver here as an upside bet. Like, I want 150 target type of upside bet, that type of upside bet, right? So that's kind of what I'm thinking there ultimately. So I hope that kind of helps you a little bit. I know I veered off into a little bit of a kind of a tangent there, but that's something I have been thinking about, that borrowing from and looking at different, because it's something that we do all the time in life, right? I can't spend all my days drinking coffee at Starbucks as much as I want to do that, right? I have to give from other parts. I have to give from that portion of my life to other parts of life, and to make it work. So, and that's really, there's a give and take in the rosters. You kind of have to borrow from a position to fill out the rest of them. I'm going to borrow from the elites at the wide receiver position. And I might have to fill it in with a little bit more depth than I would otherwise do, even though it's not something I love. But yeah, so that's kind of the plan. And we'll see. We'll take some selective shots at some HHGs as well, and see what we can get at tight end, right, along the way. So that'll pretty much do it. Again, I hope this helps as like an exercise. I would encourage you to sit down, like have a plan like this, because you'll see like top eight rounds, probably two or three quarterbacks, right? Three running backs or so, two tight ends. Maybe it's a third, maybe it's a wide receiver, right? I have basically an extra spot in there, whether it wants to be a quarterback, a wide receiver, or a tight end, right? If I go 2-3, no wide receiver, in pencil, and then two tight ends, right? That leaves me in the top eight rounds. It leaves me a spot of flexibility. That's kind of what, and that allows me to do anything, right? It allows me to basically just draft best on the board. And again, I don't have to stick all the way to that. And we'll talk about it in my show here when I come back and do another show about the team build. I will have that flexibility. And I kind of know that that's what I want it to look like at that point. And then I can make another pivot to try and add in some pieces that can help us in the intermediate rounds. So, but all right, that'll put a wrap on it for this show. Again, a little bit longer show, Sunday strategy session. It's a little bit meant to be a little bit more thoughtful, and test out some ideas for team building. So until next time, continue embracing the variance. We will talk again very soon.